Judge Frisch, Judge Flory, Judge Smith, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning. Thank you for your patience. This is the Minnesota Court of Appeals on March 11, 2020. We have three cases on the calendar this morning. We're here on our first matter. That is in the matter of the trusteeship under the indenture of trust regarding the City of Newburgh, A21335. We only received one brief in this matter, Mr. Thompson, that came from you. Can you just unmute yourself, make sure you can hear us, and make sure we can hear you, sir? Can you hear us all right? Good morning. All right. The marshal is showing a running clock of your time. You have 15 minutes for your oral argument. Just ask that you identify yourself before you begin your argument. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Yeah. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Jim Thompson. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant City of Newburgh Industrial Development Agency. And I'll have to say that in 40 plus years of practice, this is the first time I haven't had an adversary sitting either across the room from me remotely or otherwise. So it's a somewhat of a unique experience. I figured I had kind of three options of how to proceed. One is to perhaps file that time-honored adage, if you're ahead, sit down. But I don't think that's the right approach I want to take. The other one would be to request the court to allocate respondents' time to me, but I don't think I'm going to need that amount of time. So I think I'll just proceed as normal with the exception I won't be asking for any time for rebuttal. But I do think it's important to maybe explain just briefly why there are empty chairs here. First, the trustee, Wells Fargo Bank, really has no stake in this. They just want direction from the court of what to do with this excess proceeds. M&T Bank, which was a party below and made a claim on those proceeds or excess revenue, and the trial judge ruled against them, and they have not appealed. And then Gemma Development, which was the developer here, did not appear at the trial court in any fashion, and therefore they're not involved in the appeal here either. So that's, I think, a brief explanation of why there's only one party sitting here before you this morning. But the facts of this case are really pretty straightforward, and I'll just briefly touch on them. And in 1996, the IDA issued private revenue bonds in the amount of $5,700,000. The purpose of those bonds were to rehabilitate, renovate, and acquire an armory and an adjacent parking lot. The IDA retained Gemma Development to be the developer, in other words, to do the project. And the bonds were paid solely from revenue that was to be generated from the project after it was built. The IDA owned the facility and they leased it to Gemma pursuant to a lease back in 1996 when the bonds were issued. Gemma then sublet the facility to the County of Orange. Now, under the bond indenture, the trustee, the county paid the rent directly to the trustee. The trustee used that proceeds to pay the debt service on the bonds. And if there was anything in excess, the excess would be turned over to the developer, Gemma. To secure the bonds, the trustee had a mortgage on the property, an assignment of rents, and a personal guarantee.
So, counsel, really, you know, I think we all understand what happened here, and everything hinges upon the 2010 abandonment of the facility by Gemma. But what I think was missing for me is some legal authority that Gemma's abandonment of the property somehow reverts the allocation of the excess under, I think it's 4.08 of the indenture, back to the IDA. I don't understand how that happens as a legal proposition.
Yes, ma'am. That happens for the following reasons. Number one, as we cited in our brief, under New York law, when Gemma abandoned the property, it resulted in a termination of the tenancy and a reversion of all the use and enjoyment of the property back to the IDA, which was the owner of the property and the landlord to Gemma. That's a matter of New York law.
What's your best case that stands for that proposition? Because I did not see any cases that stood for that proposition. Or I didn't read any case.
The site that we gave in our brief was to the New York general practice law and the landlord tenant and New York Amjur site. So they were.
Is there a case or a statute? I mean, a landlord tenant handbook is not binding authority, counsel.
No, I understand that. I understand the secondary authority, but I actually don't think there's any dispute about that. None of the parties below disputed that legal principle.
When I look at the Kotler case, for example, which you cite in your brief, that case stands for the proposition that the surrender of possession is not always a surrender of a lease or the estate that is created. And a surrender of possession, if it is accepted, if there's some manifestation of acceptance, is evidence from which a surrender of the estate could be inferred, but doesn't necessarily have that effect unless the parties otherwise agree. And I didn't see anything in the record where there was some agreement to surrender or some other operation or some other action that was taken by the IDA to affect, I think, the legal result that you're seeking now.
Your Honor, the Kotler case, I believe stands in addition to, I thought the proposition the Kotler case stood for was that when there's an abandonment in a situation like this, where there's a landlord, a tenant who's also a sublandlord, and then a sublessee, the abandonment by the tenant slash sublessor does not affect the rights of the sublessee. So I don't think there's any dispute that in this case, under general New York law, when they abandoned the facility, when Gemma surrendered all the rights to the lease, it similarly surrendered all other rights it had to the rent proceeds that were being generated to pay off the bonds. I believe that.
Go ahead, counsel.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but my question was, did your client do anything to cancel that lease, Mr. Thompson?
You want to know, there was no affirmative cancellation because it actually terminated by operation of law when the bonds were paid in May of 2018 or March of 2018. So it terminated by operation of law, but there was no affirmative action back in when Gemma abandoned it.
So it seems like the terms of the indenture and the lease, though, still, if even up to the time that the bonds matured in 2018, Gemma was still on the hook for any unpaid rent, according to the clear terms of that lease and indenture, all the way up through 2018, because the lease had never been canceled. Am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, I think you are, and just misinterpreting something. When you say Gemma was on the hook for the rental payments.
Well, didn't they guarantee any unpaid rent as part of the lease?
Not to the IDA, to the trustee. The rents were paid directly to the trustee. The only source of revenue for the bonds were the rent payments. If they were not sufficient, they had in Gemma defaulted, the trustee had a personal guarantee from Gemma. But that transaction was fully consummated. There was never a default on the bonds. They were ultimately paid in full. And after they were paid, there's this $300,000+ left over.
So under the terms of the indenture and the lease, then I guess my question is, for instance, if rents had not been paid in 2017, could the trustee have gone after Gemma to pay those because they had signed on as a guarantor?
Yes, that's correct. They had a few options. A guarantee was one. They had a mortgage and they had an assignment of rents. But keep in mind, this was a county was the subtenant here. They were making their payments directly to the trustee. And there is no, the bonds were never in default. They were fully paid, and there was never a default on the bonds. So the issue of what to do had there been a default just hasn't arisen. So
can I ask Judge Flory's question a little bit differently? And that is, if it's true that the lease terminated in 2010 by the abandonment of the property, was Gemma relieved of its obligation to pay rent at that time?
Your Honor, Gemma was not actually paying rent. They were the tenant to the IDA. The only rent that was being paid by the county was by the county, and that was going directly to the trustee.
Yeah, so, I understand that the sublessor paid the rent directly to the trustee, but Gemma was on the hook for it pursuant to the terms of the lease. So if Gemma is out of the picture as of 2010, do you believe that Gemma was relieved of its obligation to pay rent at that time when they abandoned the property, when it abandoned the property?
Your Honor, I have to correct you on one point. This Gemma is the sublessor. They did not collect any rent. The rent was paid directly by the sublessee, the county, to the trustee. So there was no rental obligation from Gemma, the sublessor, to the IDA, the owner of the property. There was no obligation there.
So did their guarantee then expire also in 2010 when they abandoned the project or the property?
I guess that might be a question better for the trustee, but I don't think so. I think had the rent proceeds that were paid directly by the county to the trustee, at some point, if for whatever reason, they had been insufficient to pay the bonds, or I guess theoretically, if the county defaulted on those rental payments, then the trustee, Wells Fargo, had a personal guarantee from Gemma in addition to their mortgage. So that didn't happen, but I believe that's the remedy the trustee would have had available to itself had that happened. So trying to circle back a little bit to Judge Frisch's question, because there are obviously real estate components of this, but the basic claim that the IDA has is that they are entitled to the net remaining balance because they're the successor to Gemma, not only just in the real estate, but also the net remaining balance, the source of funds for that is solely rent payments, $181,000 a month from the county to the trustee. That is the sole source of the bond payments. And there was no general obligation bonds here. That was the source. So the excess funds that are now in the hands of the trustee were generated solely by rent paid by the county. And because Gemma never came into title on the property, if they hadn't defaulted, there'd be no question here who would be entitled to those proceeds. But they did default. They weren't around. The rent proceeds are the only basis for the payments to the bond to the trustee. And as the current owner of the property and the successor to Gemma in that sense, because the IDA never conveyed title to the property to Gemma because they defaulted. And Gemma has made no claim to the funds. This is not a matter where they simply defaulted below. They sent an email to the trustee saying, this is simply a matter, this appears to be an issue between M&T Bank and the IDA, parentheses, not Gemma. So Gemma affirmatively stated, and it was in the evidence of trial court, that they did not claim any of this money. Now, granted, the trial court concluded differently, but this is an issue of law. There is no deference given to the trial court on that decision. And our contention is really simply twofold. One, we're entitled to the net remaining balance because the rent proceeds that generated that the IDA is the owner of the property and it's therefore their money. And number two, the judge just took a very literal and corporate approach to the definition of successor in the indenture. Granted, that's a corporate issue. And if everybody knows, if it says a successor assigns, it talks about an entity that takes that place. But here, you have to read that definition in the context of the entire transaction. This was not simply a real estate transaction. It was a financing question. And the judge just took too literal of an approach to that. So in conclusion, Your Honor, we claim that the IDA is entitled to the net remaining balance because it is both a successor to GEMA in the sense that this deal was transacted, and because it's entitled to the net remaining balance because they were generated by rental that is the owner of the property is entitled to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. Any other questions from the panel? All right, we'll take the matter under advisement. We'll issue an opinion within the statutory time period. And with that, we're going to stand in recess until our next case. All right, thank you, counsel. Thank you.